Hi, my name's Cath Larkins. I work at the University of Central Lancashire in the UK. There I run a research centre with children and young people and with adults. It's called the Centre for Children and Young People's Participation. Together we set ideas for research, young people as well as children and adults, and we try to follow those projects through to challenge the discrimination that children face and to make the world a better place in terms of services, in terms of laws, and their experiences of life. A lot of the work that we do is with children in care, but it's with children who are disabled, with Roma communities, with young people in contact with youth justice systems, all sorts of things. All of these young people have great ideas for research projects, and I'm going to talk to you about one project in particular today. It's called Stories to Connect. In that project, young people came up with the idea of collecting stories from others about the challenges that they face in life. So the young researchers went out and interviewed other children and young people, asked them about challenges, but also highlights and the things that make life better. Using those ideas, we created a story. Well, actually, we created about 60. Those stories are here for us all to use. And today I'm using one. The one that I'm using is called Talking About Terrible Things. And I'm going to read you that story because it tells us about child participation and about child protection. So, child participation, what is it? It's underpinned by the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, and hopefully you know about Article 12, which says that children have the right to be listened to and for their ideas to be taken into account in all decisions that affect them and on matters that concern them. But child participation is also about Articles 13 to 17. So freedoms like the freedom to expression and the freedom of thought, the freedom of association, and rights to information and to privacy. Sometimes people think there's a contrast between child participation and child protection. But actually, guidance on how you follow Article 12, which was written by the UN committee, they wrote general comment number 12 in 2009, so 10 years ago. Yeah. 10 years ago, they said, you can't make any judgment about a child's best interests without understanding their views and their experiences, because that tells you about their priorities. So you have to put the two together. Child protection can only happen with child participation as well. And we can think about that by thinking about a story. So settle down, get comfortable, and I'll begin. This story is called Talking About Terrible Things, and it was based on an interview and based on some ideas from other young people, and we worked with it together to put together a story of three children. In the story, they're actually aged 14, but the things that they're talking about apply in early education settings as well as everywhere else. I'll begin. The thing is, for some people, school is just about the best place to be. That doesn't mean that everything there is okay. It just means it's a better place than anywhere else. Anyway, that's what it was like for us. We were a good group of friends. A small group, just the three of us, all aged 14 or so. And because we all have autism, we had a big connection. We felt very comfortable with each other. And we felt we understood each other. We could talk to each other. Most of the time, of course, we didn't talk. We tried to look like we were listening and paying attention, especially with the teachers who were pretty strict. We didn't get that right sometimes. If, like, things weren't clear, like no one really explained what was going on, then we'd get frustrated and kick off. Anyway, that's what happened for me that day. It was an art class. Charlene loved drawing. And Sammy was trying to make us do tracing lines. And the teachers were trying to make us do printing. And printing means you have to do things backwards. And I found it really difficult. I mean, there's a printer. You can print with a printer. Why do we need to do printing with potatoes? Didn't make sense to me. I wanted to shout. And the teacher didn't get it when I told her. So I took some time out and went to the chill room. And I stayed in the chill room until the end of the day. And that's how I missed out on the usual walk home. Charlene and Sammy headed off, walking slowly towards our estate. The way Sammy tells it, they were just walking the usual long route, you know, up the high street, past the gates, past Greg's, the baker's, and talking about Grand Theft Auto. That was another good thing about school. It was close enough to home that we could walk home. So they talked about games. They took it slowly. And I guess the two of them were a bit closer than I was to Charlene. But that day, they didn't just talk about games. That day, they stopped outside Greg's, the baker's, and they thought a bit about whether they had enough money for donuts. The way Sammy tells it, they were just counting money when Charlene started to talk about it. The terrible things that were going on at home. Of course, we knew she'd had a hard time. A year ago, her mum had tried to commit suicide. 2 years before that, her dad had gone to prison for trying to kill her. But since Charlene turned 13, she'd not told us about anything else. But that day, counting pennies with Sammy, she started to talk about it. She started to talk about what was happening now and what had been happening ever since she was younger. She said, you know, maybe we could just go back towards school. I think I dropped something. I dropped 50p or something. Maybe I dropped a pen. I dropped something. Anyway, maybe we could go back towards the school instead of going home. I just go and pick something up. Maybe we could check that, you know, I've got all the right things in my bag for maths homework. Maybe I could just get in a plane like Nat does when he's playing Grand Theft Auto. And I could fly back to school. I could get in a plane. I could fly it. I can go anywhere I want to. I've flown so many times in that game. I could fly now if I wanted to. Why do you want to fly? Said Sammy. I want to fly and I don't want to drop things and I want to go back to school, said Charlene. Won't you get pizza when you go home? Said Sammy. It's not the pizza, it's the terrible things. Terrible things, Charlene hesitated. Can I tell you about terrible things? You can tell me about anything, said Sammy, so long as we get the donuts first. Looking back, Sammy wishes he had not mentioned the donuts. He couldn't eat them anyway. And as they walked away from Greg's, Charlene started to tell him about what was going on at home and the horrible person who did the horrible things. And Sammy didn't feel like donuts at all. It is hard to put terrible things into words. And when somebody tells you about something that's happening that should never have happened to anyone, it is really difficult to know what to say. When Charlene told me the next day, I didn't know what to say. I didn't say anything because I couldn't say anything. It was too horrifying. It was a very moving story. And I didn't know what to say. And I felt terrified. I wish I had said something. I wish I'd said he shouldn't be doing that. But she just kept repeating, I shouldn't talk about it, but I can tell you. Sammy didn't talk to me about it. At least he didn't talk about it that day. But the next day, I heard him tell Mrs. Jenkins at the end of the maths class. Mrs. Jenkins was that sort of teacher. She always explained things in ways that you could understand. She always took the time to listen at the end of the class to ask if anyone had anything else to say. And she understood. And Sammy had understood. Sammy understood that what Charlene's stepdad was doing was wrong and that he could do something about it. That he needed to tell someone because Charlene needed to be safe. Mrs. Jenkins looked towards us and saw Charlene and saw me, and we walked out the class while she was nodding and smiling. And I caught her saying to Sammy, "It'll be okay. You've done the right thing." And then Sam came out to join us for a morning break. There was a quiet corner by the steps. We always stood there because it was windy. I don't know what we talked about, but we could hear the wind. The wind was whistling in our ears, and everything was quiet. I liked the noise, and I didn't know what to say. So, that was the story, and what does it tell us about child participation in situations of child protection? Well, for me, the first thing that it tells me is that children make decisions. In the story, Charlene made the decision about when to tell and what she wanted to tell and how she wanted to tell it. But also Sammy made decisions about that. And in making those decisions, they're making judgments about what keeps themselves safe and what keeps each other safe. And in order to make decisions like that, they need information. So they need their right to information as well as their right to be listened to. And they need friendship groups and safe spaces that they create together in which those moments, like the moment outside Greg's the Baker's, happens, where they make that first step. Respecting child participation and ensuring child protection means creating all sorts of spaces and opportunities. And the second point, this was a story created because a group of other children wanted to bring about a change. They were collectively participating in an attempt to create this, a training resource, a story that could be shared with other children so that other children will know how to keep each other safe and so that adults working with them will know what they need to do as well. And the story tells us really clearly that some of the things that are priorities for children are having those people, their friends, but also the teachers and the foster carers who are willing to listen, available and respectful of them. So collectively, children can bring about the creation of resources through their participation that help us understand and be in the world in different ways. So, 2 points. The third point for me is about the power of listening. I don't know about you, but every time I tell that story, I still feel really moved by it. And I think people feel moved by it when they listen to it, because almost every word in there was written by a child, and it tells you from their perspective what it is that they need. Listening like that, hearing exactly what they say from their perspective, makes you understand in a different way. And fourthly, well, it tells me about the importance of child participation in changing the world. Because it's not just about those moments of interaction. It's not just about us changing services and improving our understanding and our behaviour through being trained or discussing with other people. It's about child participation at a political level. These young people involved in this project are concerned about the cuts in services that mean more children are in need of specialist support. And they're concerned about the amount of time that adults have to work, which puts a pressure on the kind of relationships that they might have with their children. So child participation in child protection is important at that individual level and all the way out to the widest levels of social change. And for me, it also makes me think about my practice and my experience, because I'm not just an academic. I've had years of experience with working with young people in education settings and with children involved in research in child protection settings as well. And so I've learned things in the way that I have tried to apply child participation principles in practice. One of those is about being the sort of adult that children can talk to, being somebody who treats everybody as an equal and who is really respectful in those day-to-day interactions. And when you behave like that, you find that children do talk to you about things because you're a safe adult. And once they tell me about terrible things, what I try to do is to give them as much choice in that process as possible. So obviously there are things that we have to do, there are policies that we have to follow. But within that, there are all sorts of moments, small moments that make a lot of difference in a child's life, which mean that they can decide how and who is told in which way. Not all of it, but little moments of that make a big difference. And also understanding them as competent individuals, understanding their agency in those moments, and that having a sense of agency, the sense of self-determination, can give a sense of hope. That means that when you give them those choices, they can also start to talk to you about who might be safe people for them. And I can make sure that they understand what support is available. So I'm also respecting their right to information and their right to understand the process that's about to happen. The next thing I do is think about who might advocate for them in that situation. And by advocate, I mean really listen to their perspectives, no matter what else is going on, and try to stand up for what they're saying they want to happen. Sometimes you have specialist services that do that, and I'm rarely in a position now where I'm part of those specialist services, but it makes such a difference for a child to be in contact with them. And what I can do, and what I now do with the team of people that I work with, the team being adults and children, what I now do is take a step back from what they've told me and think, and what does that mean we have to do at a wider level? To listen to children's experiences, to take them seriously, and to turn them into something that changes at a really social level, economic level, political level, so that the things that are causing terrible things to happen in children's lives don't happen anymore. Child participation, if it's going to be meaningful, has to happen at all of those levels. And it has to be willing to push the boundaries so that we make a real radical change.